listening to All the Best, produced at FBI Radio Sydney and coming to you across Australia via the Community Radio Network. I'm Georgia Moody. Each week, we bring you a mix of radio stories, documentaries, audio diaries, soundscapes and fiction. The theme of this week's show is nationalism, what it means to be Australian and what kind of national identity we choose to celebrate. In the second half of the show, we've got two very surprising stories about people who got caught up in the 2005 Cronulla riots. So stay tuned.
What does January 26 mean to you?
This year, on Australia Day, the 26th of January, All the Best contributors went to Yarban Festival in the Sydney suburb of Redfern to ask people what Australia Day means to them. About 10,000 people gathered to celebrate Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander music, language and culture. Here's how Fran and Vicky from Mount Druitt describe the day.
It's so multicultural today. There's so many nationalities here, you know. But it's a blackout today, though. But it turned them lights on.
For Rob Bryant, an Aboriginal elder from Nambucca Heads, the day is about the continuing strength of Indigenous people.
Survival of the culture. That this culture, the oldest in the world, has survived even after some of the horrendous things since colonisation. So that's what it's about.
This came up over and over again, that January 26th is about survival and pride.
Our culture survived the last 200 years of invasion. Very proud to walk around today with our heads held high and be proud of who we are and where we come from.
Deba Powell, who's from the Torres Strait, has a slightly different take on Australia Day.
Well, up in Torres Strait, it's like the big thing you get down here in Old Capital City, the big barbecue. All the islands in Torres Strait, and you've seen on the school or the police station or the ambulance, they got Australian flag, Aboriginal flag and Torres Strait flags all flying together. So I didn't give much thought to Australia Day until I started to live in Sydney, then it became more politically aware of what there is a difference between Australia Day and some of them call it Survival Day or Invasion Day. There is the first people here in Australia. You know, there was the first people here. And let's all get together and live happily. You know, trying to live happily, you know.
At Yarban Festival, we also met a guy called Stuart, who spoke of January 26th, not as a day of celebration, but as a part of a powerful myth of Australian nationhood. This is what he had to say.
I think that all the attempts to beat up an Australian mythology show actually how empty it is, as though Australia is the only country in the world that has beaches, although Australia is the only country in the world where people quite like sport, enjoy special brewed drinks that are intoxicating. I think the fact that these are the things, or have friends, you know, like the concept of mateship only means something in Australia. I think the fact that that's the best, that's the most positive content they can give it, shows that actually the mythology is either empty or it's based on the denial of theft and genocide. That's really the content of Australia Day, and you can see it in recent years with the way flags, Southern Cross tattoos, have really been used as symbols of race, of racial pride and racial hate. And I think that's the ugly reality of Australia Day.
Stuart, speaking at the Yarban Festival earlier this year. Today on All the Best, we're exploring what it means to be Australian, warts and all. For many years, surfing has held a central place in our national identity. Travelling overseas, many people assume that if you're an Australian, you must be a great surfer and lover of the ocean. Well, Pat Grant fits that stereotype to a T, or at least he used to. This next story starts overseas, before coming back closer to home. Just a heads up, there's a language warning on this piece.
I should tell you a story. 2 days before I left Mexico, I was surfing at this place called Puerto Escondido. And Puerto Escondido is this sort of famous surf town, and the waves get really, really big, so the local culture there is really, really intense. And you'd see guys, sort of this giant, hairy Mexican guy surfing out there with with wrestling masks on and stuff like that. So anyway, I caught a wave and this big Mexican guy dropped in on me, which is sort of to cut me off on the wave. It's bad etiquette in surf culture. And so I kind of yelled at him, and he did this sharp turn on his surfboard, and he rammed the pointy tip of his surfboard straight up my cake hole. And so what happened was I screamed, and then we both fell off our boards, and then I came up and I sort of screamed at him and said, "Why did you do that?" And he just said, you know, in broken English, "You come here, you respect the locals." And somehow that was, for me, that was connected to the events that would happen when I arrived in Australia.
"You're not welcome. This is our land. Get the hell out."
In December 2005, Pat had just returned home from Mexico. He'd only been back for a few days when he decided to head south to Wollongong to check out a small DIY punk festival with a few friends. On the way back home to Sydney, an innocent stop off for a swim turned into something none of them could ever have imagined.
It was like the first hot weekend of the summer. And we were saying, "Look, we have to go to the beach." And when you're approaching Sydney from the south, the only beach you can go to is La Perouse, which is this sort of disgusting, oily, like Botany Bay beach, or you can go to Cronulla. And so we turned right at Sutherland and trundled on down to Cronulla Beach. And one thing we noticed was that there was traffic. It was really slow. The sort of traffic you might expect at like a large sporting event or something like that. You know, like a real, it was really slow, and we weren't sure what it was. And then there were just groups of people everywhere, and they were all sort of decked out with Australian flags, and everyone had tattoos on their cheeks, these Aussie flag tattoos on their cheeks. Everyone was sort of carrying eskies and picnic baskets, and there were kids stretched all along the beach. Yeah, there was lots of beer, lots of cricket, lots of just sitting around. I had heard, you know, a vague whisper of it somewhere, you know, in that sort of way you pick up things without even knowing from the media. And it was when I saw a banner hanging from a balcony that said something like, just the big word respect, that's what it said. This giant sort of bedsheet painted with respect. And that's when I kind of, it clicked that what we were at was this thing that had been spoken about in the media. We were near the beach and we wanted to swim, so we decided that, you know, it probably wasn't our scene, but we'd find a park and go down and jump in the water. You know when you're driving in a car and there's just a lot to look at and no one says a word? It was like that. We were just so confused, and we were just sort of crawling through the town looking at people and just trying to figure out what was going on. If you knew what we know now, you wouldn't go, but we didn't. We just went for a swim. We parked the car, and then we just basically just walked down to the water, and Rachel, who's pretty sort of articulate and forthcoming person, just started talking to people, just started asking people what is going on. And what people said was the kind of just things like, you know, they come down to the beach and they don't respect the way we do things down here, and you know, everything's shit over in their country, so they come over here and make things shit here, or something like that. You just think, what a bunch of dickheads. it was so unthreatening at that point that it was just like, well, look, if you want to come down here and fly your flags and that's fine. We're just going to go for a swim. And so that's what we did. There was a Middle Eastern family that had come down to the beach, and they looked just as confused and bewildered as we did. Like, you know, maybe they didn't read the paper either. Maybe they just got back from overseas. Yeah, and look, they weren't physically threatened at that point either. We went for a swim, and then we kind of sort of like swaddled in towels, and we were walking back, and there was this guy, and he looked like the sort of man you would meet on a bushwalk. Faded stubbies or something, and a wide-brimmed hat. And anyway, he was just standing in the middle of the sort of crowded boardwalk, just handing out these stickers that were printed on that fluoro sticker paper that you see all the student groups print their stickers on. And so he's sort of going, "Oh yeah, Aussie Pride stickers, guys, all free. And he was sort of handing them out. And so we got a few, and then we looked at them, and the stickers were Earth's Most Endangered Species, Let's Preserve It. And then there was a sort of a picture of a white person. So there were just these stickers just like plastered all over the bus stops and the rails, the beach rails and the and people's fences and whatever. Then, but for some reason, the stickers had just made us look for different things, and it really brought out the kind of the ugliness in the scene. Like a 15-year-old girl strutting down the boardwalk, screaming, you know, like "fuck off, Lebs," or, you know, like "our nulla, fuck Allah," and stuff like that. And then we realized how drunk everyone was. Anyway, and that was the moment when what seemed just boneheaded and harmless became sinister. So we pretty much bolted straight to the car. We didn't really talk much. Mainly what we said was that was fucked. There's really not much more to say. The political parts of my brain weren't even really firing at that point. I'm not a huge news consumer, but when there's a real blanket issue like that, I realise the gravitas of what, you know, became known as the Cronulla riot.
Booze or design or sheer bloody-mindedness, it all turned very ugly.
This is what our grandfathers fought for, to protect this so we can enjoy it. And we don't need these Lebanese or Lebanese to take it away from us!
I always felt quite hamstrung in my contribution to the discussion. Because it's, you know, like, these discussions are so much about these events as they appear in the mediascape, and I just couldn't trust anything I saw in the news. My kind of experience was too sensual and too kind of emotional, and I can't really subscribe to the Cronulla riot that's in the collective consciousness. One of the things I did later on was I spent hours and hours on YouTube trying to kind of piece together what happened after we left. And what I think really happened there was that there was a lot of drunk people looking for a big fight, and there was maybe just a little fight. Yeah, I don't know. I feel uncomfortable saying that. Well, it's hard because, you know, when people would talk about the Cronulla riot, what I took away from it was really unsatisfactory when it came to contributing to the discussion. People want somebody who was there to say, "I was there and it was hideous and violent and traumatic and it was the worst thing I've ever seen in my life." And I, you know, I couldn't really contribute that. So my big problem, and the reason this has been such a inflamed itch, has been that I have a deep empathy with these boof heads that live at the beach. you know, I grew up around them. I live by the beach now, and I really empathize with the cause of working class people who live by the coast. They're landscapes are being gentrified and their industries are being closed and their surf is getting increasingly crowded. So I kind of understand, you know, like I guess I feel like I can step into the shoes of someone who's a local surfer at Cronulla. So there's that, but that sort of grates up against the place that I sit in within a political discourse, because I don't, you know, all of a sudden these people that I feel I understand are doing these awful, ugly things, and out of this is emerging this rampant nationalism where surfers used to have these sort of hippie slogans on the back of their cars, and now they have Australian flags and just big bumper stickers that say we're full, and it just really tears me apart. If you come from a culture that has racist tendencies, you have to explore that stuff, and the way we figure out racism is by investigating those areas where we empathize. That's how we explore events where people do horrible things, is by trying to put ourselves in their shoes and figure it out. And yeah, I think that's why I've maybe been mistaken for an apologist. Yeah.
Pat Grant, he's a cartoonist, writer, and zine maker. That story was produced by Michelle Freeman. Today on All the Best, we're taking a long, hard look at Australian nationalism and not always liking what we see. The next story is about another person who got caught up in the Cronulla riots as an accidental observer. In 2005, when the riots took place, Catherine Lim was in Year 11. She recently spoke to producer Lauren Carol Harris at North Cronulla Beach. Just a heads up, there's a language warning on this piece.
On the Sunday where it all broke loose, the roads were jammed. The roads were jammed with traffic, and everybody was flying Australian flags. Mum was just like, I think you should stay away from Cronulla today.
This is Catherine. The particular Sunday she's talking about is December 11, 2005, and she was in Year 11 at a high school in Sutherland Shire. It all started when a lifeguard at Cronulla Beach was attacked by a group of men who were described as being that blanket term we've all come to know since 9/11, of Middle Eastern appearance. Over the next week, Catherine says people at her school started getting text messages calling for white Australians to gather at North Cronulla Beach the following Sunday at midday for what was called a day of Leb and Wog bashing. This was the day that what is now known as the Cronulla riots broke out.
The only language the Middle Eastern youth understand is a good hiding. These Middle Eastern people must be treated with a big stick. It's not just a few Middle Eastern bastards at the weekend, it's thousands.
We were sort of watching it unfold on the news, and it was really surreal kind of seeing a really familiar place absolutely teeming with people. I was like, where did all these people come from? Because it was a Sunday, I was sort of thinking, this is really fucked up and crazy and ridiculous. I don't think anyone I know would be into this at all. Like, it's kind of, it's just stupid. It just struck me as stupid. But then got to school the next day and was quite surprised. There were a surprising number of locals who came to school on Monday carrying the Daily Telegraph, which had like front page coverage, of course, waving it around with Australia flags, basically celebrating it. A few weeks afterwards, there were helicopters, military helicopters, flying overhead with searchlights that would sweep Cronulla. So we'd be seeing the searchlights and hearing the helicopters fly overhead periodically for at least a few weeks after. So it's almost like the area had sort of become this weird conflict zone.
The riots continued for 3 days. In the weeks that followed, there was a racially motivated stabbing at Catherine's local train station, and the Thai restaurant where she used to work was attacked and its owner harassed. Catherine is a second-generation Australian. She's Chinese-Malaysian, born and raised in Australia. But growing up in the Shire, she was only ever one of two or three non-white kids in her class.
I'm a bit of everywhere. So my mum is from New Zealand, my dad's from Malaysia. My ethnicity is Chinese. I've lived in the Shire ever since I was three. I grew up on a river slightly inland from here, And we had cliffs and we had bush, you had rock faces you could climb, you had rivers you could go and swim in. It's just beautiful, you know.
This natural beauty is partly the reason why the Shire is known by locals as God's Country. I wanted to get a sense of the real Shire, away from the glitz of the reality TV shows, the manicured lawns and the imitation Lara Bingles. So Catherine offered to take me for a drive and show me around.
Like, the Shire is geographically bounded by rivers, two rivers, George's River and the Port Hacking River. Like, we're defined and people see that as something that's theirs. And that has a sense of certainty about it.
Catherine tells me that the Shire is one of the least racially diverse places in Sydney, and it's partly this geographical isolation that has created a sense of uniformity and resistance to change. She says that unlike other parts of Sydney, where borders and demographics are fluid, the Shire is relatively secluded, and it's also relatively well off.
Yeah, people here live well, and that sort of goes with the sense of entitlement that I guess the God's Country moniker comes from.
Right. And the insulation in a way as well.
We've got something really good and people want to protect that. In a sense you can understand it, but what do you mean by protect at the same time?
Right.
So this is Gunnamatta Bay. This was where traditionally the Middle Eastern people would sort of come because... Like, it's a lot, like, it's a quieter, it's nice, it's got a barbecue area and stuff. Before the riots, they used to come up every weekend and have barbecues and swim. They don't do that anymore.
We come in a full circle back to North Cronulla where the riots happened. Catherine says she'd always sensed a really intense mass mentality in the Shire's social scene when growing up that she never really fit into. Everyone has sun-bleached hair, they're into surfing and football and Jesus Christ and drinking. And the heart of this social drinking scene is Northies. It's the place that Shireys go to on Friday night. Every Friday night.
Yeah, it's almost tribal, the way that people socialise around here. Just up from Northies, Northies is on the Kingsway, which is basically the main road coming into Cronulla.
This was the street that Catherine described before as completely gridlocked on the day of the riots.
For me, it sort of felt like there was a socially acceptable culture in the Shire of racism that was always present, but that I, in my sort of space cadet way of processing the world at that point, I didn't realise till the riots. It didn't hit home. And then after that, you sort of realise that these things were actually there all along, but you don't notice them because they're normalised. And you don't think there's anything significant about it until something blows up and the world throws a mirror on you and you see yourself reflected back in endless news reports, not just from Australia, but from around the world. And then you realise how messed up the area you grow up in is and how you've been implicitly just sort of not really thinking or challenging some things that have been going on that have been a little messed up. It took me a little while to realise it at the time, but the Cronulla riots were almost a bit like a growing up or a losing of innocence for me, even though I wasn't directly involved, I wasn't directly hurt, I didn't see it. I only saw it really secondhand through news and through school and through rumours and through the helicopters. But at the same time, if you think of before and after, before the riots, I could really get away with thinking that where I lived was all right and that there wasn't any racism because I had never overtly experienced it. But after, I sort of realised there actually were real big differences.
During the period of the riots, Catherine was never harassed or racially targeted, but she said she just felt stuck. Quite suddenly, she was an outsider in the place where she'd spent her whole life.
If you think about it, I'm in a racial grey area. I'm not the race that was being demonised here, nor am I white. And I am a Shire local. I remember thinking at the time of the riots that I don't have a place to sort of voice the utter not just confusion, but the whole just like, well, yeah, it was confusion. I'm a bit of a does not compute for for a lot of the people who want to put people in specific boxes because of their race. I mean, because I'm Asian, but like there was an implicit feeling growing up here that like smart Asians were supposed to act a specific way, that people were expecting you to be shy and into numbers and not to fight. People were expecting you not to fight. And I did actually internalize that. I could have challenged a lot more around the time of the riots, but I didn't.
And it's where you grew up, you know, you should feel at home here.
Exactly, exactly. And you should feel like you should be able to feel like it is my home, therefore I can impact upon it, you know, not just be impacted by it. It's just more hitting home that you can't express yourself here.
Catherine Lim, speaking to writer and radio producer Lauren Carol Harris. That's our final story today. Make sure you tune in again at the same time next week. If you can't wait until then, you can also find us on Facebook or on Twitter at _allthebest. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. All the Best is produced at FBI Radio Sydney in association with SYN in Melbourne. Our show is distributed across Australia via the Community Radio Network and supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. This week's show was produced by Carly Ann Keneally, Lauren Carol Harris, Michelle Freeman, Michael Moibus and me, Georgia Moody. Our executive producers are Bridget Dagg, Eliza Silos and Jesse Cox.